Good morning. You are listening to Action Line on KNY. I am your host, Jordan Lewis, and joining me in the studio today, I have Juneau School District Superintendent Frank Hauser. Frank, how have you been? I know it's been a pretty fast-moving month.
I've been good, Jordan. Yeah, it's been a busy month. There's been a lot going on, but it's good to see you again. Always nice to come in and get a chance to talk to you and answer questions and really get the information out to the community.
Definitely. Now, my first real question for you is, having been following along with some of the meetings that have been going on, I now understand there's potentially some surplus somewhere in the budget now. Explain to me how that came about.
Yeah, no, thanks for the question. I mean, I think, you know, there's this really is, as you step back and you look at this, this is good news. I mean, the district has repositioned itself from a multi-million dollar, multi-year deficit to a balanced budget. And I think, you know, there's really nothing new here. I mean, we've been having these conversations and talking about the overages and underages since January, but I think it's always important to step back and remind everyone that what the district was really facing was three separate deficits in three separate deficit years. We had the FY23 deficit, which, if you remember all the way back in November, Jordan, I think we probably talked about it. You know, the auditor, when the audit came back, identified an almost $2 million deficit from that was carried over from the FY23 school year. And so that was identified back in November. And of course, you know, that came to light. We had some conversations about, you know, kind of how we can start working towards addressing that deficit. And then in January, it was discovered that the FY24 budget that was developed and adopted last spring materially overstated district revenues and understated district expenses. And so that was, you know, at the January 9th board meeting, that's when, you know, we kind of came through and said, you know, here's what we've identified, that there were these materially overstated, you know, the budget that was adopted overstated revenues and understated expenses. And so that was a deficit for this current fiscal year that we're still in. And so that was a realization that, you know, we had a significant deficit that we were looking at back in January 9th. And of course, through that process in January, that's usually when you start planning and developing the FY25 budget. And so as we were going through and identifying that we had this, like I said, these overstatements in the revenues and understatements in district expenses, the adopted budget for FY24, we're also in the process of adopting, moving forward and developing an FY25 budget. And that projected deficit, if you were to take a status quo and say, okay, we're going to take the staffing and our structures and everything else that's in place for FY24, and carry it over for FY25, that's kind of a status quo carryover budget, that estimated projection deficit was about $9.6 million for FY25 alone. No carryover from FY24. And so, you know, that was, you know, what we were looking at as like 3 years of deficits that we were kind of, you know, dealing with. And so, you know, we have, through, you know, really a lot of aggressive cost-cutting implementations from back in January, really focused on, you know, resolving largely the deficits that we were facing, you know, through, you know, some of the cost-cutting measures like the hiring freeze and the resignations that we had in place. We also received a $3.9 million shared services agreement from CBJ that really helped with getting the district, and that shared services for non-instructional shared services, got the district to where we were able to, you know, have a projected balanced budget for FY24, but also looking at what we're anticipating is about a $633,000 fund balance going into next school year. And I think it's important to point out, you know, that early on in January, I identified and said, hey, I've got a goal of saving, you know, $1 million to try to help address some of the budget deficits. And as we were going through and we talked about, you know, some of the operational savings, I mean, I froze travel, supplies, I was telling you I wasn't printing papers. And so, you know, these were things that we went through and we realized, you know, through those savings, you know, about $425,000. And what I was anticipating was about $135,000 to $175,000 in savings through resignations that, you know, we had from January on, and really a little bit into December, it resulted in about a $1.3 million savings. And that is just that reduction in staffing expenditures. And then, of course, we had a hiring freeze in place, which saved about $1 million. And then we also had received some additional state funding for increased intensive needs counts. And so we received about $418,000 additional funding to the district from the state as part of the foundation formula. So you kind of put all those together, and you know, that's a significant amount. I mean, if you want to kind of talk math on a Thursday morning, you know, since January, the district had the $1.4 million savings in resignations, $1 million hiring freeze savings, $1.5 million savings from other cost-cutting measures, and the revised intensive needs count, which is that $418,000 additional funding, plus that $3.9 million shared services from CBJ, and that equates to $7.8 million in, you know, essentially, you know, the ability to address that fund balance or that fund deficit that we're looking at for FY24. And so that really is how we were able to get to that point through those aggressive cost-cutting measures that work with the city on those non-instructional. We were able to get to that point to where we addressed that FY24 deficit. And that's an important piece that, I mean, this is the FY24 deficit that we were trying to address through these, not the FY25 projected deficit that we're facing as well. And so, you know, that deficit was addressed in the FY25 budget, not through savings through this year, but really through the consolidation and the reorganization, through an increase in PTR and a reduction in force that was necessary to balance the budget for FY25. And so that's where, you know, people sometimes get confused and they say, hey, you have a deficit now. You know, we didn't need to make any of these changes. And that, or you know, a little surplus, that $633,000 surplus, we didn't need to make any changes. And that's not true. I mean, we were able through that cost-cutting savings measures to save $7.8 million. And I think it's really important to kind of think about, you know, that savings, that if you look at that $7.8 million in savings that we've realized since January for FY24, the district was only able to show a fund balance of $633,000, not $7.8 million. And so that was not revenue that was coming in. That was expenditures. That was deficit. And so we were able to shore that up and get to that balanced budget. But that also required, like I said, through the consolidation model, we have a balanced budget for FY25 built on the consolidation, reorganization, the PTRs, and the reduction of force. You change any of those and that deficit comes back. If you change a model, you add teacher, you know, any of those pieces. And so that's the thing that I think is really important to kind of get the word out there, is that, you know, we were able to get to a balanced budget through those reorganization for FY25, through all those measures, consolidation, reorganization, reduction of force in the PTR work that we did. And so that's, you know, it's been a lot of work, and, you know, I want to thank again the city for their support through this process, but also through the hard work of the staff in the district as well as the school board to get us to this point where, like I said, we have gone and repositioned ourselves from a multi-year, multi-million dollar deficit to a balanced budget. And, you know, through that process, we are still focusing on making sure students have opportunities and have access to, you know, all those items that we want to make sure that we know are good for them. I mean, there's just so much going on. Sorry, that's a lot of information. You might have some follow-up questions about that, but I mean, those are the pieces that we are working with and how we got to this point right now.
Gotcha. And really my big real follow-up questions, I mean, we spent a lot of time across multiple shows really talking about that economic impact, but I want to circle back to that human impact, because I think that's been really the big concern that a lot of the community has, and why there's been such a reaction to now there being that surplus, not even just the economics, but really looking at the human aspect of it. You know, the getting to that point came with a number of resignations. You know, people willingly choosing to step out of their careers, step out of their jobs, because they felt like the things that were going on were now no longer sustainable. And so, yeah, we have the surplus, but now all these people don't have jobs. They have to figure out something else that they have to do. You have people that are concerned about, you know, oh, now everyone's going to be congested and put into one building, or, you know, hey, I can't go over there, or this or that, and a whole host of other things. So really my question there is, how does the district really plan to handle that human impact of all of these things going on?
Well, you know, I think, you know, when we talk about the human impact, I mean, it's a good question, Jordan. As we go back, there's the impact on the staff, there's the impact on the community, there's the impact on the students as we're looking at. And of course, you know, from the very beginning of this process, you know, student outcomes was, you know, at the forefront. Looking at, and that was really one of the driving forces, you know, taking our strategic plan and looking at the reorganization that went into place to be able to provide, knowing that we were projecting zero increase to the base student allocation. So without an increase to the base student allocation, the additional fundings, you know, the district was, you know, facing a situation where we have increasing costs, but there's no additional revenue coming in from the state, you know, because there's no increase in the base student allocation. A lot of people need to remember for FY24, there was that one-time supplemental funds of $340. There was still no guarantee there's no guarantee that that money's coming to the district for FY25. And so we had to build a budget off of what we knew, and through that process, still make sure we're providing opportunities for students. And so that was through the consolidation model, you know, that, you know, the board adopted to still be able to provide those opportunities for students. I mean, for example, I mean, I'm just looking at, I sent this out, you know, we've been getting additional courses added for high school students, and, you know, the options for students that they can sign up for classes now has expanded quite a bit. I mean, just for TM students that are signing up for high school courses, they have the addition of 10 elective courses and 13 additional CTE courses that they can sign up for. Not to mention, for both JD and TM students that are, you know, signing up for courses for the Unified High School next year, they'll have additional, you know, advanced placement courses, science classes, language courses, art classes. I mean, these are programs that we are able to say, hey, we can offer these classes as long as the numbers are there. You know, we have enough students that want to take the class, but we're able to have that opportunity for students. And so from a student's perspective, you know, being able to provide more opportunities and still being able to offer sports and activities, you know, in that unified high school, because we were able to realize additional savings to still be able to provide those opportunities for students. From a staff perspective, you know, I mean, as we're looking at, you know, the human impact there, I think going through the process, and, you know, that's one thing that we feel very strongly about, is supporting our staff and making sure we've worked closely with our collective bargaining units to work with them to find a process through that is respectful and works with and supports our staff as we're going through this process. And, you know, we've been working with them. Every year we have a number of staff that resign, you know, or retire as just part of the natural process. And so we've really been looking at how we try to manage that attrition and, you know, support staff through this consolidation process, knowing that, I mean, we have been, gosh, I've been a superintendent for 3 years now. I've been an administrator for almost 20 years. And if you look at public education funding in the state, we have been, it's been relatively, the base student allocation has been relatively flat since 2017. We got a $30 increase this school year as part of the Alaska Reads Act, which is 0.5%. But when you look at the cost of inflation, those are double digits. So unfortunately, we've been dealing for years with having to do more with less. It seems like that's what we're being asked to do. And at some point, you know, that's, unfortunately, we have to, you know, kind of scale based on the funding that we have coming in. And, you know, the enrollment in the Juneau School District is going down. I mean, that's what we're seeing across the state. As, you know, the Juneau population gets a little bit older, there's not as many, babies being born in Juneau, which is, you know, kind of adding enrollment to the school district. And so all of that kind of goes through, and we try to manage that, you know, through our yearly process. And so we're always thoughtful and respectful of, you know, how we work with our staff through that human element. And as far as the community, I think as we're working through this process, you know, I've shown the slide between January 9th and I want to say it was February 22nd, you know, we had over, I think, 36 meetings, you know, community meetings, staff meetings, where, you know, we got input from the community to hear what they had to say and work through and really talk about, you know, the process we were going through, what we were facing. And so that's kind of, I think, you know, from the very beginning, it's about transparency and making sure that we're communicating out to the families. And that is something I firmly believe in. And I think that's how we continue to move forward is, here's the information, here's where we're at, here's how we're going to move through it. And, you know, we want that community input. We want to be supportive and listening to that. And that's why it was so important for myself, for the board, to get that feedback from the community during this process. And so I guess that's how I would, you know, how I look at that human aspect and always just trying to recognize that, you know, the board is obligated to pass a balanced budget. And that's in statute. And they had to have that, you know, to the assembly by March 15th. And, you know, that there's that process that the board has to do as well. And so we try to work through that process, which, you know, we were able to meet our deadlines and get a FY25 budget to the assembly by their deadline. And so we're moving forward through that process and still, you know, trying to, you know, do what we need to do to support our staff, students, and the community.
Gotcha. And now this is speaking more to some sort of external things kind of going on in relation to the school district. And I know, and I understand if you're not able to comment on this too much, there is, you know, been a lot of public demonstration about trying to recall members of the school board. And I'm not going to give names on that. If folks want to go into that or look into that, they may. And I just want to get your thoughts on that to the extent that you're able to share with me.
I guess what I would say is, I mean, that's a process that's set out. I mean, you know, we talk about a democratic process. School board members, just like assembly members, are elected officials, and there's a process for, you know, recalls that take place. And I mean, other than that, I wouldn't comment on, you know, that's a process that's set forth in, you know, through the city and borough of Juneau, and, you know, that's I guess that's about what I would say is there's a process, and people chose to exercise that process.
Okay. And then my last question really is, I know that Floyd and Marie Drake have now been given back to the city.
That is correct. Yep, yep.
And so it'll be interesting. I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the process is for what will become of those buildings. I know CBJ is having a public comment on that.
Yep.
Maybe just getting your thoughts on the, you know, letting go of those facilities and moving forward.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate you asking that question because I think, you know, one of the, as we talk about any of this consolidation or the reorganization and then the releasing of two buildings back to the city, I mean, in my thoughts are, and I've appreciated the city's comments, getting feedback. I've actually given tours of the facilities, and I know that the city is asking for public comment on ideas. They've asked that we put together some tours for community members, and so there'll be, you know, opportunities for a couple tours of those facilities to kind of get and to elicit some more feedback from the community. And so those are things that, you know, we're looking at. For me, I mean, they're great spaces. They're good buildings, and to see them being used for the community good, I think that's a positive thing. I mean, the Floyd Dryden building is a great building that will have a lot of positive uses out in the community, and I'm as a community member, I'm excited and interested to hear how other community members envision the possible use of that space or the Marie Drake building. I mean, those are things that, you know, I'm a community member now looking to see, you know, how those spaces can be used for community good and, you know, meeting needs, whether it's childcare, whether it's, you know, I think I heard it talk about, you know, potentially, you know, an animal shelter, you know, I mean, however that's being, you know, those buildings are going to be used now, I'm excited to see how they're going to be used for the community good as a community member.
Gotcha. Well, on that, Superintendent Hauser, I don't have any more questions for you, but I'd like to thank you for taking the time to come in today.
No, Jordan, I appreciate it. It's always a pleasure talking to you. If I can get a quick plug in really fast, I do want to let people know that Kindergarten Registration Day, if your child is going to be 5 years old by September 1st, registration is at your neighborhood schools. So, you know, bring your shot records, bring the birth certificate, and Thursday, April 25th from 1 o'clock to 5 is when that Kindergarten Registration Day is going to be. So I just always like to get that word out. Make sure that if you have a child that's going to be 5 years old by September 1st, Thursday, April 25th, between 1 and 5 at your neighborhood school, early kindergarten registration day. So,
all right. And with that, Superintendent Hauser, thank you very much for coming in. You all have been listening to Action Line on KINY.